Hey, it's Rob. It was an amazing week of Survivor, and we had incredible podcasts with Christian Hubicki and Steven on the Know-It-Alls. Make sure you catch those as well. Plus, The Circle was back this week with an AI contestant. Taryn, Mike Bloom, and Puya broke down the first week of drops from The Circle and on Renap. Who did Sam Moore find for the big guest? Find out on this week's Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, all right here on RHAP. We know reality TV.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our Australian Big Brother coverage. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and with me this week is Andrew. How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm back again for the second last time.
I feel like we're at week six here, and I kind of feel like in Australian Big Brother, the people that are still listening to this with us are down so far down the rabbit hole. Like we are existing in this world of insanity, and we're all just trying to like huddle together, and tell each other that it's going to be okay. And I feel like that's a pretty good, analogy for real life at this point as well. So, if anything, this is Big Brother is truly representing reality for us now.
Welcome to 2020. This is the killer wasp of Big Brother seasons. Sorry, the killer hornets.
Yeah. So it was week six of Big Brother Australia, the penultimate week. We'll have one more as we head toward the final. We are back at the final four. Back at the final five at the end of this week.
Yes.
Oh boy. So let's talk about the week, because I will say this for me was the worst week of the show so far, by a pretty large margin. It was boring, it was annoying, and I just continually find myself uninterested in the ultimate outcome of the season.
You and the producers. So, hot tea, before the season was released, there were rumors that the producers were happy with the first half of the game and okay with the middle, and were apparently very unhappy with the way it ended. So, now we know why.
I guess so. Look, they did it to themselves, really. Having a buyback at the final four is terrible. We all know this. Every time anybody does some kind of returning person at the final four, people don't like it. When has anybody ever liked this in the history of Big Brother or Survivor?
Gary from Big Brother Canada 1, probably.
But did people really like that, or did they just like how it ended? Because I think a lot of people, people aren't even mad at how Big Brother Canada 1 ended because of how nonsense it was that he was there in the first place, I feel like.
I guess. I'm just so apathetic at this point that, if anything, I am slightly entertained by how mad some people are at this twist. Dan and Matt. I'm like, okay.
That's my problem, is that I don't like those guys. They frustrate me. I think they're bad players, and I think they deserve everything that's coming to them. And yet, I am forced. Big Brother is forcing me to say, what? They have a point. It is a BS twist. Why am I having to empathize with them? I don't want to empathize with them. They don't deserve my empathy.
It's like how in Buffy the Vampire Slayer, there was that one episode where you go into reverse land and the good guys are the bad guys and the bad guys are the good guys, and you have no idea who to root for anymore. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's a universe we're living in right now. Mm-hmm. It's like, on principle, we want to feel bad for Dan and Matt, but also it's Dan and Matt.
And that's going to be my consistent struggle throughout these three episodes that we talk about. We'll get to it as we go, but it's like somehow Big Brother has used reverse psychology on me or something. I don't know. But let's talk about the first episode of the week, shall we?
Yes, yes, we shall. I will say, though, that the one thing that I am not going to give the producers any wiggle room for is that I do think that in their final six, Kieran and Sarah are both interesting people, and they've kind of done this to themselves in not only the way they've structured the buyback, but in the way they're editing it. Like we said before, Kieran and Hannah did have a flirt match. Sarah, as we will find out, has a very interesting backstory about living underneath the poverty line. There is a way to edit this show in a way that those two are given more airtime as opposed to yet another Chad and Sophie showman segment. So I'm just saying there's another way to edit the show to make it a little bit more tolerable.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, I haven't even gotten to the worst part for me. I haven't even gotten to it yet. And that is going to be the editing. We'll talk about it. But we start off the first episode of the week. We've got a new week. Kieran is feeling very confident. This is because he's at the final six at this point, and he feels pretty good because there's two pairs. There's Dan and Matt, and there's Chad and Sophie. And Chad and Sophie kind of have Sarah, and Dan and Matt kind of have him. And so theoretically, him and Sarah should feel pretty comfortable, because why would anybody bother to go after them when they can go after the other pair?
Theoretically, in a vacuum, if people are playing in their self-interest, yes. Mm-hmm. He should be okay. But like I said, we're living in reverse land here. So
Yeah.
We're living in underland. Because from down under, what can I say? Up is down and down is up.
Mm-hmm. And so we spend a long time at the start of this episode, going through the motions of and now Dan and Matt are realizing that Kieran might actually be a valuable piece for them. And Kieran is realizing that he's a valuable piece on the board. It's like, yeah. If you look at, yep. Okay.
What's even more frustrating is that Kieran said in his exit press that, he's been telling Matt and Dan for a really long time, basically after Marissa left, that, hey, I have nobody. Please use me. I have nobody. It is within your, to use a Vanessa word, incentive to use me, because Sarah is with those other two. Use me. And apparently only after Casey left did they say, hey, let's make a final three. We even see in the episode, Kieran's like, why has Dan not talked to me yet? how, Dan, I know that you have your high school antics, but how have you not talked to Kieran after 40 days in this house? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So... so there was some sort of, honestly, listen, these episodes were so slow. They're having an hour or more than an hour on a final six and then five and then four, where there's no game being played. It felt a little bit torturous.
It was like slow death, kind of so I used to do medicine, and in medical school, they would tell us about these really long descriptions in textbooks about what dying of dehydration is like. That's what we are like right now. We are parched of Angela's tea. We need her tea. Have you actually, in America, do you guys have those snake lollies? Like those candies? So gummy bears, right? So you know how, it's like a packet of gummy bears, and somebody has eaten all the good flavors, and the only ones we have left are the ones that taste like detergent. That's what we're left with right now.
All the cherry flavored.
Yeah, all the cherry flavors are gone, and now we're just stuck with four yellow ones and
Oh no! See, I'm anti cherry flavor.
Ah, right.
I'm stuck with cherry.
Four insert licorice flavored ones, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is. I will say, though, you were right. You were right last week when I was trying to defend Chad and Sophie's decision to put Casey up against Kieran. Because it turns out in this episode, Matt and Dan are so butthurt. They're like, how dare they get rid of Casey? I know we had a Final Four deal, but how dare they? And it's like, if they were going to be that mad, you might as well have just gotten rid of Wellington instead of Casey. So, Taryn, you were right.
Right. And that makes it even crazier what they do this episode. we'll get to it. We have a task that they have.
I miss Casey. I really do. I can't believe I'm saying that.
I miss Xavier. I feel like Xavier at least kind of knew what he was doing a little bit.
I do too. It's like we lost Xavier, who was clearly, I think, the least offensive of that alpha trio. And then we are lost, like, I will say it, Talia, Zoe, and who's the other one, Casey, all three women were much more interesting than Dan and Matt. At least they were, like, funny sometimes when they would do that indignant how dare they thing. With Dan and Matt, I can't stand how they would essentially bully Kieran like they did during that house task last week, you know, giving him all the punishments. And then they'll be like, but we're the good guys. It's just like we are left with the two people from the Bad Alliance where they are not the most strategic and they are not the best television either. So I miss Casey.
Yeah. So this task, I could barely pay attention. They were doing like they're making Kieran wash dishes. They were making Kieran do things, and then they, you know, they eliminated Dan from it, and Dan was like, oh, you eliminated me from it, and then Sarah really and Sophie got some KFC or something.
KFC, I think you mean sponsorship money. I just wrote down, this is the everyone pile on Kieran task except for Sophie, so that's the only interesting thing I noted in that. I noticed that Sophie was like the one person who didn't give Kieran a punishment. And it just makes me even more annoyed at her because it indicates to me that she knew that, okay, if Chad and I get power, we should not get rid of Kieran. But you, Sophie, you got to stop being like Haley. I got major Haley flashbacks in that week that Fessy put up Scotty. I'm just telling you right now.
Oh man. I feel like we've been talking about Kieran's edit all season long and how it's been so prominent, and I feel like it was really all leading up to this. Like, this was the culmination of Kieran's edit, was that all season long he's been hyped up as like not doing work, and then he finally had to do work, and that was the episode his storyline is done. He's good. Now he can leave. And then the epilogue was, Kieran is the true winner of the entire season because he managed to bounce out of there with some pocket money.
La Cucaracha with the $15,000. What did I say though last week? I told you Casey and Kieran storylines are intertwined. It's like Javert and Jean Valjean, Voldemort and Harry Potter. One cannot live while the other one survives. Looks like she's sixth and he's fifth. So.
Yeah. So we had an HOH competition where they had to balance a ball on a thing. For a while.
Hey, you skipped over the best part of the episode.
Oh, sorry.
Can't speak Big Brother. Oh. And how he can't pronounce words. It was such scintillating television, wasn't it?
Oh, man. It was. I mean, I was on the edge of my seat.
Oh, I know.
Like,
I
mean, wow. Is the Big Brother voice going to say Brava?
Brava. Brava.
Oh, he did. Oh, my God.
Oh, it's so clever. Oh, Chad is such a genius. I mean, he has such a solid grasp of basic language. That's why we can trust him to make good nominations, right?
Here's the problem, I think. The producers of this show are relying on the house guests to provide the entertainment for the show. They're trying to show the house guests as like these clever, witty, funny people with like these, you know, the banter that they're having with Big Brother and each other and the jokes that they're making. Isn't this all so fun, guys? These are not professional entertainers.
Are you not entertained? Welcome to our Coliseum of boredom. You're not entertained.
Because that's the thing. Like, these are not entertainers. Like, these are just Matt from Broken Hill. Like, he's not a comedian. You know what I mean? So yeah. Like, why are we acting like these people are comedians? The thing that makes the show entertaining is that you stick a bunch of people who otherwise would not be entertaining and you force them to play this insane game that makes them do things that they would never do in real life. And they end up interacting in ways that are really entertaining. Just watching, you know, five blokes, you know, hanging at the Barbie in the backyard, cracking stingers.
Back in the Barbie. I'm proud of you. I've taught you very well.
I don't think you have. I don't think that was anywhere near it. I don't think you should take any credit for that.
No, I'm very proud of you. It's a huge accomplishment making jury on Big Brother and saying Australian slang on week 6 of Big Brother Australia. It's a huge accomplishment, everyone. Congratulations.
Mm. So yeah, I feel like they're just it's falling flat. We need something competitive here if we want to do something fun, but it's not there. And it's, look, this is probably a problem that I would have with any version of the show, like Big Brother UK. I don't know what they do in the end stretch to make it entertaining, but I don't know. It's whatever they do, if it works, the Big Brother Australia people are not doing it.
I mean, the issue is that in Big Brother UK, right, so you will lose like an Angela or something earlier on, like a big personality, but what eventually happens is that the public starts weeding out your Mats and your Dans halfway through the season because of the moral indignation, and because Big Brother UK and Big Brother Australia are not big fans of morally uprighteous people. So what would have likely happened is that the final like 6 would have probably had Chad and Sophie, but it would have probably had a Marissa or a Hannah or a Xavier in there as well. We are having essentially the worst of both worlds, where we have the morally indignant people and we also lost the big personalities like Angela, because the advantage of a BBUS format is that an Angela or a huge personality could theoretically go far and let the public warm up to them, kind of like how the Canadian public warmed up to Olivia and Ali, even though they weren't super close to those two in the beginning. So I do think we got unlucky in that with this hybrid format, we got the worst of both timelines.
I think it's a problem.
It's a bad boot order.
I think it was a problem of casting that sort of determined. I think there were some gems in this cast, but there weren't enough of them, and there were too many non-gems, we'll call them, who went in who didn't want to play very hard. I think it was a self-fulfilling prophecy here. And the game itself doesn't encourage hard gameplay because of how it's formatted. So but you know, these are we've talked enough about the faults of the format. So we do have an HOH competition where they're balancing a ball. I've yet to see a competition that Kieran is going to have a chance of winning. Just like anything that is too like this is probably one of the ones he is closest able to win, most able to win, because it's not super physical, but it does require a lot of balance and sort of finesse. And those are two things that Kieran does not have very much of, unfortunately.
Kieran's not finessed. He's not very subtle. Oh, yeah. God. This is brand new information to me.
So of course he's not going to have much of a shot at this one, and it's going to come down to Chad or Dan. And this is interesting because Dan wants to go after, rightly so, wants to go after Chad and Sophie if he wins. He's trying to get Chad to throw it to him. And this is what I want to see. This is the stuff that I want to see. I want to see Chad throw this to Dan and then have Dan turn around and put them both up on the block. Like, I would give my vote to Dan if he did that and pulled it off. That's That's the one piece of consolation that we can get when there are people in the endgame that we don't like. At least they're playing hard, right? But we don't even really get to see much of that. But he did try. So I'll give him that. It seems as though he is on the cusp of getting Chad to throw it to him when he slips up and loses, and Chad ends up taking this one.
And we were on the cusp of having a great season.
Well, at least a nice moment, right?
Yeah. Dan is so frustrating to me in that I think at this point I'm ready to say that he probably is the best player in this season. In that he has the killer instinct. Like we can talk about it later, but he has the killer instinct. Even Angela is online saying that Dan is frustrating because he will, for every like misstep he does, one step backwards, he will do two steps forward. Mm-hmm. But it's so frustrating in that, okay, so you will like nominate yourself as bait, but then you would also like convince Ian to like put up Angela for you, which is like, you know, it's like, oh, you're good and the bad. And it's also, he would have the killer instinct to go after the showmats, but then when the twist doesn't go his way, he would whinge and whine and threaten to quit. It's like...
Yeah, it's like in Big Brother 14, we had the best player of Big Brother of all time face up against probably the most adversity that any player has ever faced in a consistent fashion. Like every week, the worst case scenario happened to Dan Gieseling over and over and over. And he managed to overcome it through his skill in the game. Dan from Big Brother Australia is like a weird, inverse of that, where he is creating his own adversity every step of the way. Like he's good enough that he's able to create alliances and bonds and
himself. Yeah.
Yes. And like yeah. put in like a bunch of good work at different things. And then he makes strategic decisions that completely undermine his moves consistently, like over and over and over. And it gets to a point where, he's finally, like, for the first time at the end of this week, something goes wrong for him that wasn't his own doing. And he's like, whoa!
I wish Brent were covering this season, because I know Brent would, he probably would have lost his mind already at the whole green tea saga during Zoe Gate. But I think at this point he would be saying, own your shit! Own your shit! Because that's Dan's, I think, biggest obstacle, in that he doesn't, I think, own the fact that he's a villain, right? In that he's a good player, but he's a good player because he's willing to, you know, backstab Chad and Sophie. He's a good player because he's willing to throw Xavier under the bus. He's a good player because he's able to onion himself, but also be proactive in terms of his aggressive gameplay. But the problem is that the audience is not on side. We can talk about this later about the way the public, Australian public views him, but spoiler alert, the Australian public is very pro Chad and Sophie right now, because they're saying, Dan and Matt are snakes. It was such a quick,
They're pro Chad and Sophie after the edit that we got this week? I am so surprised.
I know, right? It's so shocking, but it's like, it's almost like, I'm trying to think what's the optimal strategy to do in like a Big Brother Australia, like a hybrid format. And I think, you should still make the move because it's the right move. You just need to own it. Angela went big game hunting. She hunted down like these big threats and the public loved her. I really think the Australian public would be on Dan's side if Dan would just say, hey, I'm not the hero. I'm the bad guy. I'm making these moves because that's the game. And I think he's making a miscalculation in thinking that he has to like play the good guy or claim that he's the good guy in DR, when in reality, this is the same guy who wore Marissa and Angela's clothing in the DR to make fun of them, bullied Kieran, and then moped around every time he didn't get a KFC. I think if he would just own his gameplay and his villainy, we would be more amenable to him. Do you hear what I'm saying?
I think you're absolutely right. However, I think that what you're saying is true, in that people like Dr.
Will. We love Dr. Will.
Right. Like people like me would appreciate it if Dan owned his villainy. Like I might actually go, you know, I can actually kind of appreciate Dan if he was a villain who was able to own what he was doing. However, I don't think that it would work. I don't think it would be enough for the public. I think that no matter what Dan does, basically what we're looking at is production decided to turn on him. They were keeping both him and Chad and Sophie, the Dan and the Chad and Sophie balls juggling in the air all season long. And in this final week, in this penultimate week, they decided to take Dan's ball and chuck it over the fence and go, here it is, guys. It's Chad and Sophie. Like, when production decides that, there's nothing you can do. Like, the edit that we got this week was so obnoxiously pro-Sophie that I don't think there was ever a chance that anybody else... I'll be quite frank. I think Sophie is winning this hands down. I don't think there's any chance that anything else is happening based on the edit that I saw this week.
Yeah, Sophie took Dan's ball when he dropped the ball and then kicked it over the fence. That's what happened. But actually, I was going to talk about this later, but I think this is actually a really good place to talk about it right now. I actually disagree that Dan's win equity would be low if he owned his villainy, because did you watch All Stars of Australian Survivor?
No, I didn't.
Well, you've probably heard the terms like words like Luke, right? You remember Luke from season 2.
I do remember. Luke was great, yeah.
Yeah, Luke came back in season 4, and in season 4, he was friends of David, who was basically a Luke, kind of like the new Jericho, right? Mm-hmm. So David then came back in All-Stars, and he won. Spoiler alert. David was so ruthless. Like, think Boston Rob in All-Stars level of ruthless, and the Australian public ate that up. You know why they ate that up? Because David in the confessional would say, look at me, I'm tricking Phoebe, fan favorite Phoebe, into giving me her idol. Look at me, I am like tricking people into giving me all their like plot tokens. He even like took out his two idols and he did like the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh impersonation of Iron Man. And he even like put on a hoodie and said, I am like Darth Sidious, come to the dark side. The Australian public love it.
And Luke is great at just crowning his partner, huh?
Oh, he really is. He has good taste like that. But my point is that these, if you are like willing to like say, compare yourself to Darth Sidious or Emperor Palpatine, right? And you are willing to like say, yeah, I'm a villain and I'm having fun with it. Then guess what? Your approval ratings will be all the way up here. I think Dan's issue is that he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. When he is like being a bully and he is reportedly involved in like sexism or racism and all these other things, and you are also being indignant, I don't think people are going to like you. And I'll be honest right here. I think that we have two issues to deal with, right? Right. The first issue is the buyback, whether or not that's fair. That issue aside, even if the buyback were fair or unfair, I think if this were a traditional season, Sophie probably wins the jury vote, because I did the calculations and I read everyone's exit press. Sophie has Shane, Sarah, Hannah, Marissa, Angela, and Kieran on lock. That's 6 votes. And I do think that there is a not insignificant part of Dan and Matt alienating people on their way out. And is it really the producer's fault if they've, say, given Sophie a pro-Sophie edit? Or is it more like the Dan and Matt hero edit has finally worn off?
Here's what I'll say. I think that if people liked the villain on Australian Survivor, like I said, I did not watch that season. But I'm willing to bet that because this guy won, the edit aided and abetted his rise to popularity, right? If he does not win, the edit probably portrays him a bit differently. They probably portray him as a bit of a fool who thought he was doing so well and then failed. And the audience probably sees him in an entirely different light. And if we look at something like, Big Brother US, you have people like Jeff Schroeder, who I think is actually decently comparable to Dan, especially in his returning season in season 13. But the edit never turns on Jeff And Jeff, to this day, is beloved by the audience. And you have somebody like Frank, who on his first season was terrible, but people loved him because the edit was very favorable. On his second season, he was terrible again. Surprise, surprise. But this time, the edit turned on him, and people didn't like him anymore. I think that what I've found time and time again is that the edit, regardless of how bad or good you are, can decide basically how you are portrayed. I mean, even, I mean, we talk about this with, you know, look at Kemi in season 21, who Kemi was wrong. She did nothing wrong. Justice for Kemi. But they still tried to portray her like she was a bad player and did something wrong because that's how they wanted to do it. And to this day, there are so many people out there that are like, well, why justice for Kemi? She was a terrible player. She was her fault. She didn't even talk to Jackson. And so I think when it comes to public perception, the edit is reality and the producers choose who they want the public to like. And that was my problem with the end game of this, from in the first place. I just like, I wasn't expecting it to be this blatant, I think is my problem. I thought that they would at least try to make it seem like they were being impartial and be a little bit subtle about it, but no, not the case.
I'm so shocked though that they did such a big U-turn on Dan. I really thought they were going to continue the coronation in it on him. That's why I guess I'm finding this a more of an intellectual exercise, because up until basically this week, Dan and Matt, I think, very much had the edit in their corner. And this was such a blatant turnaround to a coronation edit of Sophie. And I'm trying to think why they did that. I think it's almost talking about that is more interesting than the game itself.
Well, I think it's probably because they ran the game to this point. Like they were almost never not in power. They almost never didn't dictate some kind of outcome for the week, even if they were insane doing it at times. I think that that basically, and we've seen Survivor do this too. Like think about with Brad Culpepper in Game Changers, where like
Spencer in Cambodia,
exactly. Like they have a good edit all the way up until the end, and then it makes you turn on them because they don't want you to be mad the whole season long about this person. He's still there. They want you to like them until it's time for you to drop them so that you're not upset throughout the season. That would be my guess as to why they've been glossing over these things, not to mention the fact that they want to avoid controversy in the first place and this person made it far. I think that for them, it's a much easier storyline if you like Dan and Matt and them for a while, and then eventually they start to run thin, and then the reason you turn on them is not because of any of the controversial stuff they did. The reason that you're turning on them is because they're mad about the twist and they're whining about it, and now they don't look good anymore. And look at this underdog rising from the ashes. She is Daenerys Targaryen. And so it's a much cleaner
bad choice. Bad. I was about to say, Sophie, bad choice in Game of Thrones to compare yourself with.
Right?
That is not the person you want to compare yourself with in the end game.
Right? but I think that would be my theory as to why Matt and Dan and them had like good edits up until this point, only to have things turn on them at this point.
Oh my goodness, how the tables have turned, the turntables turned. it's you know how Rome was not built in a day, but well, I guess Rome falls in one day then, for 1 week. The Rome that was Dan and Matt. Mm-hmm. It's interesting though in that somehow Chad and Sophie made the bad move this week, and yet Dan and Matt are the losers. I'm just still trying to compute that in my head.
Because
Dan and Matt made the move that was necessary.
Yeah,
like they did it.
So. It's because this is not a real game. The producers decide the outcome. That's what it is.
I almost want to think that like this reminds me a lot of Australian Survivor Season 1 in Growing Pains. And that, remember when Nikai Danza was saved by that double tribe? Mm-hmm. Oh, whoopsie, it's not a tribal twist in like the pre-merge. The non-elimination. So if you do the math, it made sense that they would have a non-elimination here because of the number of episodes they ordered. And so 20 episodes and 20 house guests and a final three. However, I just thought that in the future, have the buyback earlier. I don't think a late game buyback was helpful because Let's just say that the buyback happened. It saved Marissa, right? So Marissa is still there. I think that there's a chance that Dan and Matt would have told Casey during her HOH, absolutely not. You got to put up Chad and Sophie. You're not wasting to send Kieran. And we might be looking at a different endgame. You hear what I'm saying? I think that this was a case where the producers should have known that, hey, if you try to save someone late in the game at final six, this could backfire. Big Brother Canada won. I guess we're looking at a trend, right? Survivor Australia, season one. Big Brother Canada, season one. And Big Brother Australia, season one. It's growing pains.
And man, it's just like, it does not speak well of Chad and Sophie that they clearly have the coronation edit. And like, that means that everything we've been seeing of them all season long has been the absolute best that we could have gotten from them. You know what I mean?
I will say though that Sophie, to her credit, in this, we can come for her gig in the next episode, but I will give her, let's give her some credit for this episode. We see her not dump on Kieran, and we even see like during the HOH, right? She's talking to Matt and she looks nervous, and Chad decides it's not to,
this conversation, she asks, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt, but I get so riled up about this. She asks Matt, like, are we still good? And he's just like, he just kind of like looks away like,
It was so bad. Well, Matt, like, he's like, oh, I can't lie to her. I'm like, just say it.
You're literally fumbling at the 5 whatever yard line right at the end, man. This is what's about to happen. If you don't, like, just say yes. You only have to lie for like 30 more seconds.
Oh, I think this is very much a case where Matt thinks that if he lies, like the hand of God will come down and slap him in the face or something. It's so weird.
He'll get morality. His broken hill card rejected.
Yeah, or what was the theme this episode? Campbelltown. Yeah, I'm from Campbelltown. We just don't do that in my mates with Campbelltown. I'm like, Chad, stop talking like that. It's so... And I mean, the worst part is that Chad sees that Sophie's nervous, which is why he doesn't throw it. But then he nominates Kieran. I'm like... Oh, yeah, let's talk about it. So Chad wins. And Sophie, do you notice? I noticed this in rewatch. Sophie walks with Chad as he's going to nominations for very briefly. And it's really obvious that Sophie, well, here's a little inside baseball. Do you know what Chad's original nominations were?
I didn't know he had original nominations.
Kieran and Sarah. I am so glad he did not do that. Yeah. Sophie talked him out of that. And I'm like, oh my God. That would have been worse. Can you imagine how bad that would have been?
I thought you were about to tell me that, like, originally he tried to nominate Matt and Dan, but then they had to redo it or something.
I don't know. Sophie, like, this is why I'm giving Sophie some credit. And I'm like, yeah, you're the recipient of the buyback, blah, 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 blah. But at least she has somewhat of a head screwed together. Chad is going to nominate Kieran and Sarah. I'm like, oh, my God. And Sophie was like, no, no, no. Like, I've worked really hard on, like, staying on Sarah's good side. Because remember, Sarah, like, got Casey out for them last week. And that's how you're going to repay her? Are you kidding me?
I'm so annoyed that I have to, like, give credit for, like, it's like everybody, if this is the stock watch, like, everybody's like just consistently a one. But then occasionally, a player is a two, and I have to be like, well, got to give them some credit. At least they're not a one. Sophie at least nominated one of the other people, but then doesn't get them voted out. At least Dan is somehow able to do some work in here against a bunch of ones. None of these people are good in any way. They're twos instead of ones. Like Dan and Sophie, maybe Dan is a three. That's generous.
Let's make this very clear for the board. So Chad was originally going to nominate Kieran and Sarah. Sophie talks him out of it, but only talks him out of it for one of the two nominations. Sarah, upon hearing that Sophie saved her, chooses to bail to evict Kieran despite Sophie's wishes. So everybody is screwing up on some level.
It's worse, actually. Like, it's worse to nominate one of them and not both of them. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I know. He might as well have just put up Kieran and Sarah.
It's exactly what's like, it's so frustrating to me because Sophie, remember, did the same move last week with Casey plus Kieran. Uh-huh. So it's like, if you're going to get Kieran out, like, why are you getting Kieran out? Like, he's not coming after you explicitly. He's even saying in the white room, I want the boys out, blah, 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 blah. So why are you talking to Kieran? Two, why were you going to put up Sarah, your own ally, up against her on the block? Three, just put up Matt and Dan. Why is this so hard? Mm-hmm. But how do you feel about Sarah's decision now then? Now that we know it's Kieran and Matt, and Sarah apparently decides, oh, I want Kieran gone. I have issues with that. I'm sorry.
Okay, this actually makes sense to a degree, though. If you know that
Sophie just saved your ass, and your response to Sophie saying, hey, I stopped Chad from nominating you, is okay, you want Matt gone, I want Kieran gone. Like, come on.
If I'm Sarah and Sophie comes up to me, yeah, and says, man, Chad was about to put you on the block, mm, and I convinced him not to do it, I'm like, why the hell is he about to put me on the block in the first place? How is that even a possibility? You guys clearly aren't loyal to me if you're willing to put me on the block. I can't trust this guy to stick with me. And, you know, look, if it's a, I don't know if they know it's a final three yet, but like,
oh, they know it's a final three.
It's kind of like the Suri move. If you're Sarah, you need to take out the person that everybody else could theoretically drag to the end. Like, you need to, like, the pairs are going to should target each other in the next round. And so if you take out Kieran, then the two pairs will have to go at each other. And that means you'll probably end up in the final three with a pair, and you'll be the third option. And that's a pretty good place to be, because the pair could end up splitting votes.
You heard it here first, folks. Karen just compared Sarah to Suri. Somebody clip that and send that to Suri.
I don't think that was on purpose. I think she probably just did it out of spite. But I think, unlike most of the moves that have been made this season, this one somehow, I think, ends up in a maybe okay situation.
And I think you're right in that the one huge benefit for Sarah is that Chad is also the one saying, hey, I want Kieran gone. So Sarah can just tell Sophie, well, I don't feel comfortable, like, voting out Matt if Chad's not on board. So mm-hmm. Sarah can just conveniently deflect. Like, yeah, look over there. It's not me, it's him.
Yeah.
Go talk to your boo. Sarah, though, impressive in that, what, she, even though she had to get a veto, she is not even nominated until final five in a season of three nominees. I know last week you said, results oriented, but maybe we should give her some credit, because here's a discussion point. Do you think Sarah is the best player on this season? And I do think there's an argument for it potentially being her. She is the third to two pairs in the final five.
Yeah.
Well, okay. With the final three.
I'm not spoiled. I do not know who is going to be in the final three. But I did want to make a case for why I think Sarah should win this game if she is in the final three.
Not that anybody will care.
But I think she is, like, has behaved the best of the five remaining players. I think she has made the least amount of egregious errors of the five players. And therefore, I think she should win the game. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show.
Okay, let's just like skip over the rest of this particular first episode because we really don't need to talk about
Kieran
it.
Kieran leaves.
Straight to, yeah. Kieran leaves and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah. Sophie's hesitant. Yeah, moving on. Sarah. Okay, I agree. I think Sarah overall has been the best player this season, and it's unfair the edit she's getting because let me put this straight. She won two HOHs even though she got steamrolled in both of them. She has a veto. Was not nominated until Final Five in a season with three nominees. And she's the third to two pairs in the Final Five. And on top of that, she's playing the floater game. She was a floater, not a coaster. She's made the least number of unforced errors, if we're using a tennis analogy. Yeah, mm-hmm. Sometimes she overserves and it goes over the net too far. But at least she's not hitting it into the net. She knows how to rally. And I do think she's the best player. And it's not even close.
I'm inclined to agree. I think like if I'm looking at the players, I think a player like Dan has more like raw skill than she does. But I think that he is held back by a lot of things.
And
despite the fact that I do think the producers decide the winner, I do agree with you that he has made a lot of mistakes in terms of like public perception. Like if the edit. Because I hope that let me make myself clear about this point as well, just in case I was misinterpreted in the previous portion of this podcast. But like, while I do think that the producers are deciding the winner here with their edit this week, I think that if the producers were being fair all season long, he would also not win based on his behavior during the season. I don't think there's any scenario where Dan wins unless the producers decide that he wins. And that's like, I think the producers have decided he's not going to win. So poor Dan. But I think that with that in mind, the fact that you do need to play the audience to a degree, I think that he has failed in that regard pretty spectacularly. And so even if he was a better like in-game player, I think you have to take into account all of the mistakes that he's made with the audience and with just like the perception of him as a human, and all of the awful strategic unforced errors that he's made throughout the game. And so with that in mind, I think Sarah, as maybe like a two or a three.
I would say higher than that, to be honest. I know we were frustrated with her last week, and we even said she's 19 and blah, 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 but I would give her a 5 or a 4 out of 10. I do think so. I think she would do well in Big Brother US. I do think let me ask you this. Do you think that she is a better player than most of the people in Faute or The Hive? Yes or no? I think yes, which means she's a 5.
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Because like anytime she was in power, she just like, had no will of her own.
Yeah, but who's coming after her? You hear what I'm saying? She needs a tiny girl.
In order to win a jury vote, she needs respect, right? And if she's playing in a game with people who aren't, you know, a bunch of terrible people all over the place, like if Sarah's playing in a season like Big Brother Canada 6, is she ever going to win that jury vote? You know what I mean? Like she's kind of like...
She has they kind of bring it up this... they should have brought it up earlier, but she has a sob story, which is, shame on you editors for not bringing it up earlier, but she lived underneath the poverty line. She's the youngest in a family of 5. She's the first in her entire family to go to college. She got into the army when she was 16, and she said her ideal car is the Toyota Corolla because like she's that poor. She's a very like, she has one of those like stories where, I even looked into it. She's had a tough life, like, and she's worked very hard to get to where she was. They even bring it up of that the public would love her. And I do think in Big Brother Canada 6, if she gets to the end, she might win because I read this online. People are comparing her to Paris, especially the third to two pairs type of deal, and how she's like the last one surviving. She's like the cockroach. You can drop all these bombs on her and nobody nominates her until final five. I could see a timeline where she does.
Yeah, but the thing about Paris is that she was a lot more proactive in the game, and she definitely had a mind of her own. She made a bunch of key decisions throughout the game, and she was part of a lot of pivotal moments, and she stepped up her game dramatically at the end. She won a bunch of competitions. She took down the major players. Sarah hasn't done any of those things, you know? Anytime she has won power, she's just let the other person tell her what to do. I don't want to be down on Sarah because I want her to win. She's my favorite person left, but I wouldn't necessarily put her in the middle. I would say a 3 out of 10 overall. I would say that she is more suited to a game like this where the audience decides the winner, considering her backstory and considering how likable I think that she can be. But we are in a situation where this is the kind of game that she's playing, and the producers have decided that her story is not interesting enough, and so she probably won't or wouldn't win a public vote if she got there.
Which is crazy, because I think the public actually would vote for her. I was looking online, not only in Twitter, but also the media. The media loves her, even with the small amount of screen time she's getting. She's one of those people where no matter how hard the producers are trying, they still like her. Between the knee thing and how we have a drought of likable people here.
Can I just say,
Australia has a drought.
Ever since her knee situation, I've just been paying more attention to knees. I can't help it. I'm just like, why is she so afraid of knees? And so I'm looking at knees, and I will say, knees are weird.
Yes.
They're weird looking.
Like, it's wrinkly.
Yeah.
And sometimes they have band-aids on them.
Like, if you're standing straight with your legs straight, like, there's no knee that looks not weird.
You heard it here first. Heard it here first, people. Knees are weird.
Yeah, I think this is groundbreaking stuff. Put it on a t-shirt.
It's my knee-jerk reaction to the season.
Yeah.
But I, as a rebuttal to your can Sarah win in the end thing, I will say people have won BBUS seasons before while doing nothing. Let's say. Who's that girl who won against Tyler? I can't remember her name. But
even Casey could win a bunch of competitions. And I'm not high on Casey's game either. You know what I mean?
Look, I will just say that I think Sarah's she is at least an average or replacement level player on BBUS, which is why I believe she's a 5. You believe she's a 3. But we both agree that she's above a 2.
Yeah, I love that you give her more credit than me. I'm glad because I want her to get credit and I want her to win. I wish I could agree with you on this one.
I just think in a BBUS season, no one's gonna waste an HOH on her because she's likable enough. She can win a comp when she wants to. She knows how to play floater. I just think that she would go at least a jury, like an Annalise or a Sis would. And I think that she's more likable than an Annalise or a Sis, which means that she, like,
I
you know,
and keep
Sis,
saying you Annalise or Sis.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. As though they're two different people.
I'm sorry. What's a vowel? What's an adjective? I don't know. But what I'm saying, though, is that if we've given Sis a 3 before, then Sarah should get more.
Well, that was the thing. I think people liked Sis in the house, and I do think that she would have had a chance to win a jury vote in that game.
Oh my god. We are not. Are we being serious?
Yeah. Do a look at the jury, man.
Oh my god.
So
bad timelines. Yeah. Kieran's in the white room. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to episode 17, which I think has been I think most people would say this is the weakest episode of the season so far. I'm going to say it's the following episode because I hate twists. But this one was really bad, where we are just cutting back and forth between Kieran in the white room and the players in the house who their furniture is gone. Who took their furniture?
This was so stupid. I'm sorry.
It was.
I just wanted the camera to stay on Kieran in the white room because that's how little I was interested in the furniture segment.
And this is, again, I feel like it's like they took the final five and they said, guys, do some improv and that's going to be our whole episode.
Yeah. I will say that Sarah was like my spirit animal in this episode, where so when she notices the furniture is gone, she says, "Ugh, I gotta put a bra on for this. This is so stupid. Why are we wasting time?" And I'm like, I just love how she does not care. And she's so annoyed that like she has to sit through this segment. It's like, oh my God.
I think that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, because that's a real moment. That's a real moment of her just expressing frustration. And that was the most amusing part of the whole segment for me. The second they get into this sort of like semi-scripted improv, like, we're going to entertain you mode, I'm just like, these are not comedians. This is not that funny, man.
Yeah. Sarah saying that she has to put on a bra is more interesting than Chad and his lolly jar.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Shall I read you a quote though from Matt? I just want to hear your reaction to it.
Yeah. Yes.
This is an actual quote. "I'm still Matt from Broken Hill. You don't just burn your morals for the sake of a bit of money."
Yeah.
And then 5 seconds later, he votes out Sophie. So I just want to, what's your reaction to that?
I mean, typically, like what people will do is when they're doing something that they feel guilty about, they'll double down about their position on that very thing, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So like, if he feels like he might be perceived as a bad person, he feels like he is a little bit of a bad person for turning on Sophie, then that only further encourages him in the mind of somebody who is, you know, acting this way to state out loud how good of a person he is and how it like burning his morals is not something that he would do, because that in like, I think in the twisted mind of a rationalization, you know, kind of situation, you're telling yourself, if I say this out loud, if I say I'm not the kind of person that burns my morals to advance myself in the game, and then you do something that looks like that, you'll go, no, but it's not that. See, because I just said it, I don't do those things. This is not one of those things. Does that make sense? It's a very, it's how, I think it's how this sort of like guilt shame mechanism works.
Yeah, it was kind of like how I used to tell people, oh, I'm totally straight and I definitely have a girlfriend. Yeah, I definitely have a girlfriend and I'm very, very, very straight. What are you talking about? I am so straight.
Right. And like, if you made out with a dude, and then
what are you talking about?
You'd probably then like have the urge to tell people you were straight to like counteract it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I watch RuPaul's Drag Race for the outfits. What? I don't watch it because I'm queer. But like, I feel like it's my mission to like make a Drag Race reference once, at least once in one of these Big Brother Australia podcasts, because we have nothing else to talk about.
Mm.
But yeah, you're right. The doubling down is interesting. Doubling down, Sophie is saying to Chad, "I felt like we made this pact and we trusted it all the whole way, but I feel nervous. I feel like we should have kept Kieran last night." How do you feel about that, Taryn? And how Chad is like, "No, the boys would never, they wouldn't do that to us."
I mean, it's obvious, but it's also like, it just further frustrates me when later Sophie is going to claim the moral high ground when like, obviously you were trying to make a move on them. You just couldn't do it. And so they did it first. And now you're acting like you have the moral high ground, even though you were trying to do it to them. Just because they succeeded and you didn't, doesn't mean that they're somehow now worse than you.
Maybe she should have nominated the boys instead of Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Just saying. Who do you think is going to win a competition? Dan and Matt? So an AFL player and the guy from Broken Hill, or the constipated girl?
Yeah. Is Sophie really going to say that if she won this HOH, she was going to put up Sarah and get Sarah voted out? Is that what she's really gonna say? Like, of course not. So I get it. You're mad. You got voted out. But like, once you, like, after a few days, you're coming back in. Like, don't act like you're on some like righteous revenge spree. Like, you were gonna do the same thing to them. Be like, you know, touche, you got me, but now I'm here to get you. You know what I mean? Like, don't, it's the self-righteousness that is so frustrating.
And I think it's also frustrating that she's complaining about a boys' club when, like I said last time, women won 10 HOHs and 9 of them none of those HOHs voted out a woman. Sophie, if you don't like the fact that it's a boys' club, maybe don't use your two HOHs to take out Angela and Casey.
Hey, don't make a Final Four with three dudes.
Yeah, just saying. Maybe if you didn't vote out women, there would still be some women here.
Yeah. So, I think that there was like Kieran's song in the White Room. The one thing that was redeemable about the White Room segments to me, that was a bit of a banger.
The White Room segment, it gave us a banger, but it was a banger kind of like in the way you know how in an album, there will be like three singles and then the fourth one they push out is like not as great and it'll maybe land a number 50 on the top 100 chart. It was like a number 50 to me. And I think that kind of sums up my feelings towards the White Room twist. They've done this twist in BB Australia and UK before where it was far more interesting, where people were losing their minds. Think, you know, in Big Brother Canada 2, there was the War Room and there were those three, Allison and those two other guys. And yeah, they've done a White Room twist like that where the intruders were like staying there and they were losing their minds because, spoiler alert, sensory deprivation is a very real thing, but it was just not interesting to me. The box twist. There are so many twists this season where they've taken these elements of BB UK, which should be fun, and have somehow watered them down, kind of like the tea that Zoe was drinking throughout her HOH train.
Making the tension of the scene, is he gonna quit? Can he take it? Can he take the isolation for a couple of days? When we've seen Angela already do this? You know what I mean?
This twist needed to be earlier, honest to God, because when BB UK, when they did it, it was like BB Canada 2. There were at least three people in the room. This is more interesting when it's a tiny room with three people in the beginning of the game who are waiting to be voted in. Like, I think that's far more interesting. People are already nervous. It's pregame. You're losing your mind. You're getting way more content than like Kieran in a room by himself.
So, and I feel like they also, and I feel like this is permeated throughout the show all season long. Speaking of these like improv sessions, I feel like they prompt the house guests to act a certain way. And I feel like we even saw some of it with Kieran, where Kieran was like being his cheerful self in there. And they were like, Kieran, you're having too much fun. You're supposed to be miserable. And he was like, oh, okay. And then he acted miserable. And then they were like, is he gonna quit? And I was like, no, he's just giving them what they want. And I feel like that happens a lot. I feel like the house guests are trying to give Big Brother what they want. And acting things up like their fears, and like, you know, whatever it is, because they need the footage of them acting that way. But like, there's no way he's going to press the red button. Don't act like he's going to press the red button. Don't insult my intelligence.
Yeah, like if you want to give us good TV, just put a bird in the Big Brother house and see Dad's natural reaction to that. That's good TV. Like, there's a difference between putting a bird in the house and seeing Dan react like naturally versus telling Kieran, now you're going to make a song.
Mm-hmm.
And, one other thing that I'll mention is that Kieran is naturally funny. They don't need to prompt him to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
In his exit interview, they asked him, so what was the worst part about the White Room? And he deadpanned, looked at the camera and said, the part where I had to shit on the floor. And then he said, just kidding, there's a toilet. That's funny. He's a naturally funny guy. Like, just the way he deadpanned, looked at the camera and said, yeah, can you imagine me shitting on that white floor? It would have been a nightmare to get out. I knew my gameplay was messy. No, I'm kidding. There's a toilet. And I'm like, he's a funny guy. Just like, you don't need to like prompt him to do anything.
And you know what would have been funnier for me, at least? If they had been like, can Kieran last in the White Room or will he press the red button? And then you cut to Kieran and he's just like chilling. And he's just like, he doesn't care, because of course he doesn't care, because he's chilling in a room for a couple days. Like, it's not a big deal. Your thing failed, your premise failed, own it. Portray that on the screen.
Own it. How dare you on Rockstar's daughter's birthday give us fallacious storytelling like this? It's real cute. How dare you drag storytelling through the mud like this?
Be able to, instead of always having to poke fun at the house guests, poke fun at yourself for once. Say, you know what? We set this up and it didn't work. Isn't that funny? Because it can be.
It's a case where I think at this point, you and I can both kind of tell what the real story is, and we are getting frustrated that the producers are trying to get one up on us by telling us a fake story. That's what it is with the scripted conversations or the improv sessions. And I think at this point, Taryn, you're like, I don't even need live feeds to know that this is a crock of baloney.
Yeah.
Stop trying to sell this to me. You are insulting my intelligence. Stop it.
And that's the thing. Like, I feel
Ali
like...
Ali is not the mastermind. Johnny is. Stop it. Stop it right now.
And it, like, there are people who... who will say, who don't know the show, Big Brother, when the show comes up in general conversation with the general population, right? That they'll go, you know, that show's completely scripted, right? And you're like, I don't think you understand how it works. Because like, that's the perception. The perception is that you can't have a reality show that's entertaining unless it's fake. But it's the opposite. And that's what shows like Survivor and Big Brother learned, I think, early on, where they had these, you know, Survivor especially had these scandals of like, they were trying to put their hand on the scale, and control the outcome of the season. And it didn't entirely play out the way that they wanted to. And that's a good thing. Rudy shouldn't have won, right?
Rigor mortis, and
I think as the show progressed, they learned that having bad outcomes sometimes makes the show work, and that trying to force a storyline is only going to like suffocate the show and kill it. And so like what the reason people watch these shows is because they want to watch the real thing that actually is happening. Even if they're yelling and screaming, no, my favorites are going home, I hate this, they will keep watching because it's real. If they feel like it's not real, they're going to stop watching. That's when people actually turn away. That's when indifference comes in. And so
yeah.
I don't think that shows should shy away from the reality of what happened, even if it doesn't fit the storyline that they're trying to tell.
It's the real deal, to use a Big Brother Canada 6 term. And to add to your point, there is beauty in tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
If we set up our faves, like our Janelles and our Kesars and our Howies, and then they fall at the end, why do we still like Big Brother 6? That's for the same reason why the Red Wedding is such a pivotal episode in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
If you make the audience care about your heroes and then your heroes fall, that is still a great television moment. The worst thing that anyone can do in terms of narrative is indifference and apathy. And I feel apathetic. That's the truth.
Yeah. And Game of Thrones is a great example because George R. R. Martin created an intricate world where heroes can rise and fall, and it felt real and it felt raw. And then when they ran out of source material, the showrunners created fan service.
Sophie Khaleesi is coming to Westeros.
But by the end of Game of Thrones, people were indifferent because it felt contrived, and it didn't feel real and raw anymore. So we get another HOH competition where they do a thing where they're
a puzzle.
And
it's between Sophie and Dan. And can I say, it is frustrating to me that the first time they do a puzzle is after Kieran is gone.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Like, it was a puzzle, but even then they made it like a very physical puzzle. Where like, even if, cause I thought about it, I was like, oh my God, a puzzle. Could Kieran have won? Oh no, he definitely couldn't have won this. Having to run back and forth attached to a bag that's full of your body weight. He's at a significant disadvantage in this one. Like, the cardiovascular skill just isn't there.
It's you know how some people love Cardi B? I like Cardi O. And in this particular situation, you need Cardi O to win this challenge, and Kieran has none of that.
Andrew, that was a step too far.
I was quoting Ryan. I'm surprised you didn't pick up on that deep cut. I was using a Ryan reference from
BB Can 6.
Yes.
I remember that was the first time I had ever heard of Cardi B. I learned who Cardi B was through Ryan in Big Brother Canada 6.
Yeah. Speaking of Cardi B, everybody go stream Nicki Minaj's album Queen. It's very good. Just had to put that out there.
There you go.
But
Nicki Minaj is not a sponsor of this podcast, although
no,
she clearly should be.
Yes, she clearly should be. And if speaking of Nicki Minaj and Queens, Sophie came very close to winning this one, but she did not. And I kind of wish she did, because I think if she got it, I could see her putting up Dan and Matt. And if we are looking at a timeline where Sophie is going to win anyway, why not her winning by her doing the big backstab on Dan and Matt?
Well, and honestly,
beneficiary of the twist.
I wonder if she had won this and she had backstabbed Dan and Matt and they had been able to be the self-righteous, indignant ones. And they were the ones, let's say Dan is the one that comes back from the white room full of revenge. Does Dan get a promo talking about how he is the, Jon Snow of the season, and he is coming back from the dead, and he is going to, take the season by storm. And he is the one that gets the underdog edit. Because now he is he is the one that we are coronating.
Maybe, but in order for that to happen, Dan not dieseling has to be likable in the first place.
I mean, they did a decent, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like was the public on Dan's side, like, in the first portion of the season?
I would say the first 3 weeks, but then I think quickly, once Angela became the fan favorite, despite the producers trying to edit her in that weird way. I think this is a very odd season in that I think the producers were not expecting their shenanigans to fail, because that's what happened. They failed. They did not want Angela, Marissa, Hannah, Kieran, that side of the house to become popular. But if there were a Joker's updates, they would all be at the top. And even the public is like on the Angela train. Like Angela, I think, has 3 times as many followers on Instagram than everyone else. And it's not even close. And Marissa, despite her lack of screen time, is massively popular over here as well. And I think this is a case where, correlating to that, Dan increasingly became unpopular, no matter how hard the producers tried. Mm-hmm. Which is why I'm speculating that the producers decided to cave in this week and say, okay, fine, we'll give Sophie the coronation edit, because no matter how hard we try, Dan is not going to happen. It's like Fetch. Stop trying to make Fetch happen. It's not going to happen.
Well, I think they also did like sort of slowly let go of the Dan edit, in the back half of the season, as, you know, he was like the target of the underdogs for a while. And I think that it was in large part to protect Sophie and Chad, who were working with him very closely, but got to basically be very separate from him. And so like they were kind of protecting him, but also propping him up, and only so that he would like slowly the audience would turn on him, and then they'd crush him, and then Sophie and Chad can sweep in and take the crown.
If Dan loses in a final 3, I fully expect copyright royalties from the term Dan not Giesling. Just saying, it'll be the second time a Dan loses in a final 3, even though he might have been the most strategically savvy.
All right, so Dan wins the challenge, and this might ultimately lose him the game. Who knows?
Even though it was the correct move.
Right. But Dan is finally going to make the move on Sophie and Chad by putting Sophie up next to Sarah, with the intent to send Sophie home.
Do you think this was the right set of nominations, though, even if we consider the lack of the veto?
I mean, he's in complete control of the outcome. He trusts Matt implicitly. And, you know, with Matt deciding to vote Sophie out, he can break the tie. So it doesn't really matter who he puts up. So if his objective is there a possibility that we can keep Chad on side by keeping him off the block, which seems to be what they tried to do. I don't mind the attempt, even though it's going to fail, and it was probably always going to fail. Maybe it would have been smarter to try to pull in Sarah and put up Chad and Sophie both, and say to Sarah, like, we're keeping you safe because we want you here. But I mean, I don't know. I don't think there's a way that he can keep either Chad or Sarah on board, no matter what he does with the other nominations. Yeah. So ultimately, I don't think it matters a whole lot.
See, I think it was a very bad move to not just put up Chad and Sophie together on the block. Because on the one hand, I get it. Sarah has avoided the block until Final 5, and you kind of have to take that away from her resume. Like, you just have to. Because if this were Big Brother US and someone had gotten to Final Five, someone has gotten to Final Five and can say, hey, I've never been nominated before. You don't want her to be able to say that on finale night, regardless of whether a public or a jury is voting. So take that away. But say that Chad and Sophie are on the block together. It doesn't matter what Sarah does. Matt does what you want him to do. And then bada bing, bada boom, one of them, Sophie goes. But the problem with putting up Sophie and just Sarah is that one, Sarah has no incentive to trust you, and she could easily just work against you at Final Four. Two, if Matt doesn't do what you want him to do, you are screwed because Sarah goes home and then you're up against a showmance. At least if you just nominate both parts of the showmance, it doesn't matter what Matt does. One of them is going home.
Yeah, I mean, I do get that. It just doesn't make any sense for Matt to, like, the idea of Matt, which granted, these people do things that don't
Matt
make sense
came
all
very
the time.
Close there, remember? Yeah. Matt was like on the fence about it.
So, you know what? I think that's I don't actually believe that Matt was ever not going to vote Sophie, but I think you actually make a good case there in that, like, under normal circumstances, I don't think it matters who he puts up here because there's no way in hell Matt's going to not vote out Sophie. But given the fact that these players are complete wild card, terrible players, Matt could theoretically do anything. And that is kind of dangerous. So I can kind of see your point here.
And one final reason to absolutely do it is because if it were a typical US Big Brother season, you want to keep Sarah off the block because she's the least able to win veto. Which means that she's the least able to, you know what I mean? Put up Chad and Sophie? Yeah.
If there was a veto,
And I just think that the risk of allowing both parts of the showmats to reach Final Four is too great to not just, like, put them both up and then say, I don't care which one goes home, but secretly tell your ally, hey, I want Sophie gone. Mm-hmm. Especially when you can tell Sarah, hey, I did you a favor, I didn't nominate you, blah, blah, blah. Because if there's no jury, why do you care that she's never been nominated before? It's not like the Australian public gives a crap.
I mean, like, there is some precedent to taking out somebody's showmance and then reeling in, like, the
but Chad's going to
duller
be
half of it. You know, like, think like Rachel and Brendan, you know, in season 12, where, like, after the Brigade gets Rachel out, they're able to just completely snow Brendan and take him in. But you're right, like, late in the game, that's going to be even more difficult. But
it'll be like Steve and Johnny Mac saying to Liz, hey, listen, Liz, we took out Austin. Work with us instead of Vanessa.
Steve and Johnny Mac, I don't think, granted, I think they're both great and much better players than both Dan and Matt. I think they are not quite as capable socially of reeling in the bros.
Hey, Johnny Mac did a good job, to his credit. Remember that time he told Clay that he would, no, I don't want to use the veto.
Yeah. So ultimately we do see that, that Sophie is going to get sent home here. And I said last week, I thought there was zero chance that, that Kieran was going to go home that whole week. This week, I thought there was zero chance that Sophie was not going to be the person that returned. I thought 100%, it doesn't matter what happens in this episode. She either gets voted out or she stays in by the next episode. She's back in the game 100%. Because she's getting the win. Like, after the promo they had at the end of the previous episode, which we kind of have talked about, I think it was at the end of this episode. Sorry. But even then, at this point, based on the edit that she was getting and the edit that she had from the previous episode, like, I was like, they've tossed Dan and Matt aside. It's not going to Chad. It's not going to Sarah. So it has to be Sophie. And so she gets voted out. She gets sent to the white room, and then we get the promo, which very much confirms that, you know, Sophie is Khaleesi, and she is going after evil Dan and Matt, and just wait and see, guys. We're going to see what happens.
Let's talk about the tiebreaker then.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
So Dan says, I quote, I would prefer if it were a unanimous vote so that I don't have to do a tiebreaker. Was he seriously hoping that Chad would vote out Sophie? Like, what's the logic in that?
Like I said, I think they were probably hoping that they could keep Chad on board.
What universe would he vote out his snuggle buddy?
Yeah, but I think also it's a way of like, you know, he's not going to say, yeah, I can't wait to break the tie. I would love to break the tie. I think he's just saying like, oh, I don't want to have to make this decision, which, you know.
Yeah. Can we talk about the voting confessional though? Because guess what Chad's voting confessional is?
What?
He's like saying, I'm sorry, Sarah. I know it's you tonight.
Did he really?
Oh, yeah. Sophie, to her demise, and this is why I continually defend Sophie. The reason why I'm defending her is that it becomes very obvious to me that she is the Haley to his Fessy. Chad had no idea. And even after Sophie gets voted out, Chad's like, I got played. And I want to do like the Arrested Development music in the background, like the clown parade music. I'm like, did you seriously not see this one coming? What the hell, Chad? Come on.
Oh, man.
Blindside.
Yeah.
That's why I'm kind of almost mad in a way, in that it became obvious, I think, that Dan and Matt wanted to keep Chad because they just thought that Chad's like the bro. But wouldn't it have been hilarious if Chad was the one they voted out, considering that Chad's the one who's like so trusting of them? I think that would have been better television in some way. If like it's instead of Sophie, Chad's the one they vote out. Imagine that. Because Chad, who's so trusting, Chad, who just used his last HOH to not nominate them. I think that would have been better television to me anyway.
I mean, probably. I think
Sophie's like vengeful Khaleesi thing would have been more fun if it was kind of like a Rachel Riley.
Yeah,
oh, if it was my man.
If it wasn't rigged by the production.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, it wouldn't have been the right move though. Unfortunately.
Do you think so? Who do you think you should have talked to if you were Dan?
It's 1,000% Sophie.
Because she's the. I mean, they've both won two HOHs.
She's a much better competitor. She's much more likely to win a final vote, I think, on the public. She is much less trusting of you and Matt. She wants to go after you. She has a much closer bond with Sarah. Like it's from every possible angle, she's the better target.
Yeah, the only defense, I guess, is that women have not won Big Brother Australia since 2008. That's the only reason I did not. But speaking of Sophie, she's now in the White Room.
Yes. And we're going to get more of the same in the White Room. Although we do get, I will say, the shot of Sophie entering the White Room with Kieran creepily standing behind the door. That was a good shot.
The gift that keeps on gifting.
So the next episode, this was my least favorite episode of the entire season. The entire thing was pointless.
Yeah, it's a Suarez. It was a that's what Sophie Sarah called it, right? You know what, Taryn, it's gonna be okay though. Everything is gonna be all white. I was sitting on that joke for a while.
What even happens in this episode? They have an HOH, but it's not really an HOH.
It's an episode of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. That's what it is.
Yeah, like, it's an episode of, like, for as much as I hate Matt and Dan, they won two HOHs back-to-back, and that tanked their game because all of it was pointless.
You know what, that it's so hilarious to me in a way that if this were like a conventional season without the rigor mortis, Matt would have won this HOH, would have targeted, I would say, let's just say Sarah, and then it would have been the three bros and Dan probably wins, but instead Dan and Matt are in a bad position because they won the last two HOHs.
Yeah.
But hey, at least Sophie is carving revenge as a bitch on the walls, so.
Yeah. Which again, it's like, is it revenge or is it like uh-huh. You need to prove yourself? Because like you're the one that failed, you know? Like you were trying to do the same thing, and if you tell me you weren't trying to do the same thing, then I'll have even less respect for your game. So you're kind of in a lose-lose here.
It was very what's that movie with the prisoners with Morgan Freeman?
Shawshank Redemption.
Yeah, it was very Shawshank Redemption. Except,
get busy living or get busy dying.
Yeah, exactly. Except at least in the Shawshank Redemption, we had a happy ending. Not so sure about this one.
It's the same content in The White Room too. It's like, are they gonna quit? Can they take it? Like, yes, of course.
I will say though that I did find the tower of foods things items that they stacked up like a Jenga block was pretty high. I was thinking, is that safe from an OHS perspective? Because they were stacking marshmallows on top of each other. You remember that?
Yeah, I didn't notice.
Welcome to Bring Big Brother.
My tactic for watching Big Brother Australia is not paying full attention at all times.
Yeah, you can tell though that, like, why should you pay attention when the rigor is so obvious? When Sarah finally gets to talk to her parents, her mother, and she doesn't even get a video call. It's like a phone call to her mom. Meanwhile, Dan gets his girlfriend's face emblazoned on a screen. So blatant. But hey, Sarah says her dream car is a Toyota Corolla because she's never had money. She's the first person in her family to go to college. What's your dream car?
My dream car? I don't have one. I used to be, when I was young, one of the first video games I ever played was Gran Turismo on the PlayStation. And my favorite car was the Mitsubishi Twin Turbo. And so I always said, if I get a car, I want it to be the Mitsubishi Twin Turbo. And I honestly, to this day, I don't even know what that means. I know what a Mitsubishi is, but I don't know. I don't think a twin turbo is an actual kind of car.
I mean, as long as the Mitsubishi has a sunroof, then Sarah thinks it's a dream car. that's the criteria, right? We are so low on content that we are scraping the bottom of the barrel. But hey, surprise! Sonia's on the screen. Yes, they're coming back. Yay!
I mean,
was there any doubt that Kieran was not going to take the money?
Oh, I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but I knew that Sophie was coming back. I knew Kieran was not coming back. I don't know if I wasn't sure that he was going to make money or how much money he was going to make, but I knew that it was going to be Sophie that returned.
What would you have done if you were Sophie in that position, and what would you have done if you were Kieran in that position?
If I'm Sophie, I'm not taking the money at all.
Yeah.
If I'm Kieran, I'm doing exactly what he did because he has competed in what, 16 HOH competitions now, 15?
Yeah.
And had no chance of basically winning any of them. And they are not going to let him in the end because they know that he can win an audience vote. So he can't get there unless he wins. He knows he can't win. So you might as well just take, 15 grand.
Isn't this a great metaphor, though, that in the end, the ultimate winner is Kieran, the one that Zoe and Talia and Casey were all crying about, and he's the one who walks away with the most amount of money? And let me remind everyone, he takes that away from the prize pool.
Yeah.
So now the prize pool is like 250,000 minus 15K.
Yeah, it's like 235. Like, you really? You're that cheap? Like, was that there was no point to that because it wasn't like, oh, you're going to take it away from the total prize pool and that will cause you, that will cause some social ramifications for you in the game. No, he's out of the game. It doesn't matter at all for Kieran. It literally is just a way for them to save 15K.
Yeah. And I think it was a giant F you to everyone still remaining in the house.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you think about it, whoever is like fourth place is going to get less money than Kieran now. Even though Kieran was evicted two cycles before them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, Kieran, I liked him. He was nominated, I believe, six times. Yeah. He was nominated seven times, and he survived six evictions. Pretty impressive.
I can appreciate that he tried really hard to sell, like, a decent line of BS. He kept... And I think he knew what he was doing. Maybe he didn't.
I think so.
But I feel like I think he knew what he was doing in the sense that he constantly found himself in a position that should be good. And so every time he did that, he acted like he put himself there intentionally, which he definitely didn't. But I think he knew that this is a show where you have to control your own narrative because the audience votes for you in the end. And if he makes it to the end because of the position he was in, even though he didn't do it on purpose, but he's able to take credit for it in the diary room by saying, I'm in such a great position now, I'm in control, and things work out for him, he looks pretty smart. When it doesn't work out for him, he's out anyway. So I feel like it's not a bad tactic.
Can we talk about that? Because in the exit press, he's said that he doesn't understand his edit. He's actually apparently not. It's not that he's not happy with it. He makes fun of the fact that some people on this season are not happy with his edit, where he said, gosh, I wish there were more warm and fuzzy moments. I thought that was really funny. But then he said he doesn't know why they put in all those clips of him saying he was a mastermind when he said that he said those sarcastically in the DR. Like, he was making fun of himself, but they edited it as he was like fully believing his own hype when he was fully like aware that he was not a mastermind. And I think that's his humor. He's the sort of guy who would make fun of himself. You could like remember that time he threw a medicine ball down at the floor and said, yep, that's my exercise for the day. And then walked away. That's his sort of humor. And I don't understand why the editors were portraying him in a mastermindy kind of way. Because Kieran in his exit press, I love him. I'm sorry. Guess what he says he regrets the most?
What?
He said his biggest mistake was going after Danny and telling Garth the Danny green room thing because Danny was an ally. And that lines up with what Danny said. And Kieran says, if I didn't do that, chances are that we would have had more numbers and I would have been in a better position, but whoopsie daisy. I'm like, it's just very odd to me that he got such an inaccurate edit. And I think that nearly everyone on the show had an inaccurate edit because Kieran to me comes off much more self-deprecating in real life.
Well,
than he did on the show. And I don't understand why they edited him like that.
And I'll say this. It sounds like he wasn't doing what I thought like would be a good strategy. But I think still by you know, playing up this mastermind role, if he succeeds, it makes him seem humble if they play it as sarcasm, makes him seem smart if they play it as genuine. If he fails, then they can play it as sarcasm and it makes him seem humble and self-deprecating. Or they can really screw him over and play it like he's being genuine and make him look like a fool. But that's 3 out of 4 situations where you look pretty good. So I don't mind it overall. But yeah, I will say,
it's a good strategy. Be sarcastic in saying you're a mastermind of the DR, and then the editors can use that to make you either look like a genius or make you look self-aware. So yeah, well, no matter what.
But here's the thing. I think the reason they decided against making Kieran more likable is that we talk about this on Survivor sometimes, where if you have a season where the winner is really boring and didn't do much, it drags the entire season down because in Survivor US, the winner is supposed to look the best. And they don't even do it that much. Like they're not nearly as bad about it as Big Brother Australia clearly is. Right. But I think the problem is that with looking, this is, and I could sound like a complete idiot if Sophie goes home in the next episode and she doesn't even make the final three and Chad or Sophie aren't even there or they don't win. But I feel like they've been given the coronation, right? It feels to me like Sophie and Chad are supposed to be the winners. They're supposed to look better than everyone else. And because they're so boring and not interesting and like there's not a whole lot to show there, they've had to tone everyone else down so that people aren't as disappointed in the outcome. If in order to make, you know, Sophie look amazing, you have to make sure that everybody else is less so, especially when it's Kieran versus Sophie in the white room. I think that's why they have the promo of Hearst being Khaleesi. Like, they need to do everything in their power to make sure you're not rooting for Kieran to win that. Because if you're disappointed that Sophie wins that and then she goes on to win the whole thing, you're going to be even more upset. So, that I think is what the editors often are trying to do. They're trying to manage the audience's response to the players, and they want the audience to be happy with the outcome. And that ties back in with everything that I talked about earlier in terms of like trying to control the narrative as the producers. And it's annoying. I think that, going back to like, why didn't they show Kieran and Hannah, kiss? Because they didn't want you to be rooting for
twice.
They didn't want you to be rooting too hard for Kieran because Sophie beats Kieran and they wanted you to be rooting for Sophie. I think that's what it was. So, and especially with a show like this, where they're not even used to, it being a strategic game where they're not in control of like who leaves every week. So they're probably even less used to unfavorable outcomes because the way that Big Brother Australia has gone in the past has always been whoever the audience most wants to win always wins by its nature. Right. 'Cause they vote for it. So they are, I think, trying even harder to manage those expectations and trying even harder to make sure that the person that the audience wants to win does win.
In a world where they want everyone to win or they're trying to please everybody, nobody wins. Because guess what happens when you focus test your season and you try to edit it in the least offensive way possible? You end up with the Rise of Skywalker.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Because you're like, oh, I'm going to do this bit of fan service. I'm going to have a showmance here. I'm going to do it this year. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait. This is oatmeal. So bland. Mm-hmm. No one's happy.
Yeah.
But at least we have questions to talk about. But before we go to the questions, can we talk about Dan and Matt's indignation when Sophie house? Like when Matt was saying, I walk, I've had enough, pull me out of the house. Like before I had a 1 in 4 chance. Now it's 1 in 5. What's the big, you've blindsided me. I'm done with this. What the hell was that, mate? How many times do you have to, you got to beat people before they're done and gone? I'm going to quit. How did you feel about that segment?
This is again, like, I don't want to defend these guys, but like, I can understand that reaction. In the history of Big Brother, this has happened a few times. When you are HOH and your HOH gets overtaken by its stupid twist, that HOH is always really upset. We've seen it happen in Big Brother Canada. We've seen it happen in Big Brother US. The biggest example, of course, and she, of course, had other things to be upset about at the time, but she was most upset in that moment, Shima, about her HOH being overtaken and it being a stupid twist. And I think she wasn't even allowed to compete in the next HOH. So it was like incredibly terrible. And so she has a poor response to that, understandably, and eventually gets ejected from the game because of it. So this is not like a unique response. Like everybody who this has happened to has had a very frustrated response to it happening to them. I can't really blame them for being upset in the moment. If they continue to whine about it in the future, it reaches a point where like, all right, it's not fresh anymore. Get over it. It happens. It's happened to other people. But I can't, like, there's plenty of other things for me to criticize about when it comes to these guys. This isn't one of them, I think.
Well, for me, it's really bad gameplay to stomp your feet around and not even hi to Sophie. I think that's my issue in that.
For sure.
Like Sarah, if Sarah doesn't get to the final, like Sarah was in a great position with like two boys plus Chad and herself, right? Where I think there's a scenario where Chad obviously wanted to break up Dan and Matt. So that's at least one person who's competing with her. So it's 2 versus 2. And I think there's a way that you can picture those boys to go after Chad. So she's in a good position. Sophie coming back into the game, it just resets her to the place she was before, right? So it's not ideal, but she still went out and greeted Sophie and hugged her and stuff like that. Dan and Matt didn't even say hi to her. They're saying, I'm going to quit. I think that's the issue. We saw this when Angela came back into the house too. Dan refused to say hi and blah, 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 blah. And look, I think twists are not fair and life's not fair, but do that in the DR. Don't show it in front of your other competitors because the game is still going on.
Yeah, and that's like I'm not gonna like be overly critical about it, but it's still not my preferred behavior. Like, I would get, like, basically, I'm not going to, like, necessarily, like, dock them a bunch of points in my mind for acting this way. But if they had acted in a more mature way, I'd be like, good on them for acting mature in this situation, because they must be fuming inside and they're still holding their own. But they didn't, like, because of course they didn't, because they're Matt and Dan.
And, like, to Shima's defense, Shima got what? Censored in an eviction speech when she was calling out that racist dude.
She had a lot of other things to be upset about.
She had other things to be upset about. Yeah, and the producers were, I think, favoring the Dans and the Mats of her season. This is a situation where Jeff Schroeder all of a sudden has Kelsey from Big Brother Canada 4 walk back into the house. So why are you whining, Jeff? Sit back down. You've been fine all season.
Yeah, and Shima's just like the most extreme example. As I've said, like anybody this has happened to has been very upset about it.
You know what? This is very Pax Bro to me. Like Dan and Matt are very Pax Bros in their attitude of how they think they're the best things ever. They are either comparing themselves to masterminds, or I guess one of them will be saying, "I'm like the Derek Lavasser of this house."
Yeah,
and it's very indignant.
Yeah, but.
Hey, that's, Sophie, she's every single queen. She's the Ice Queen, Queen Felicity, Queen of Sheba.
That's what we have. Kieran takes the money. I think it seems like he hit it right around the right time. I saw somebody on Reddit did like the math. They were like, it was going up by this amount every couple of seconds. So the maximum amount it was going to be was like something like $15,000 to $17,000. So he landed on it in pretty much just the right spot, based on that person's analysis, at least. And Sophie comes back in. Dan and Matt are understandably upset, but acting like children. And that's going to be, our episode. We're going to head into the final couple episodes next week.
Before we head into those final episodes, I'm just going to fetch the two questions we have. We didn't get a lot of questions. This was a rough week. But the first
question, we've got two listeners left.
Well, a few people are actually listening to this. It's more like, I think at this point we can kind of see where the story's going. Mm-hmm. So, less questions. The question I have, this is from Chris Christo at Chris Christo on Twitter. So said, okay, if Chad and Sophie both make the end, who should get the vote? Sophie, who was more strategic but benefited from a twist, or Chad, who was not strategic but never got evicted?
I hate this question.
Because it's a one that forces you to think, and you don't want to think during this thoughtless season.
Man.
See, the audience, they challenge us more than the show does.
Yeah, my opinion doesn't matter. Like, I think Sophie will win, but
it's asking for your opinion, Taryn.
I think, man, at the end of the day,
who would you vote for? You're on the jury. Chad or Sophie?
Go. I would have
knowing
to,
everything you know.
Like, I would have. I would have. I would have to give it to Chad. I can't give it to somebody who came back in at the final four. I just can't.
You would vote for Fessy.
If Haley, if Haley had been voted out and then came back in at the final four, I would vote for Fessy.
So Haley got voted out at final five and then came back at final five. So it's like a reset week, though. I mean, wouldn't you have voted for Frankie if he got back via reset?
No, I would have voted for, I mean, I wouldn't have voted, I wouldn't necessarily voted for like Victoria over Frankie, but I probably would have voted Caleb over Frankie if he had been like about to head out the door. And then the week reset, but, I don't know. It's hard and it depends on like the particular circumstances, but,
this is a good question though, right?
Yeah. Like, because the thing I keep coming back to is that like, if I vote for Sophie, I'm endorsing that twist and I hate that twist. You know what I mean? Like if I vote for Sophie, I'm saying that twist is okay. Not only is it okay, but I like it. I like it more than the other. I like it so much that I like it more than the other two people. And I can't send that message.
How about this? If if Sophie did not get voted out by the twist and was sitting at the end with Chad, would you vote for her?
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Okay. Yeah. So let's put that on the record. you would vote for Chad over Sophie due to the twist, but if there were no twist, Sophie over Chad. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And our next question is from Michael McDermott, and it's a similar question. If in a final two between Chad and Matt or Chad and Dan, who would you vote for?
Chad and Matt or Chad and Dan?
I think those are two separate questions. I would vote for, I think Chad should beat Matt. I think Chad versus Dan is a bit tougher.
I'd vote Dan over Chad.
Yeah. Chad over Matt or Matt over Chad. Broken heel. Broken heel turn.
I would probably do Matt. Matt over Chad.
I knew you were that guy, Taryn. You're a broken heel buddy.
The broken heel stuff is what gave me pause.
Yeah. No, the broken heel stuff is why you voted for him, isn't it? It's like
I probably would have said Chad before this week, before you told me that his original nominations were Sarah and Kieran. That just took me over the edge with Chad. Like, I just can't with that. At least Matt voted out, you know, Sophie.
Yeah. Okay, here's a question from I'm truly iconic Nat. Okay. The question is, okay, the BBAU returns Twitter on Instagram did a poll recently which ranked the house guests as follows. Do you agree with this ranking in terms of how much you like them as a person?
As a person, nothing to do with their game.
Yeah, just like as a television character, I guess. So gameplay aside.
Well, I think there's three aspects that I would look at. There's like how I view them as a human, like as a person that I like, how I view them as an entertainment character, and how I view them as a player.
Okay, then let's pass it out into as a player and as a television character. So two separate things. Okay. So I think you're going to find this very interesting. I'm going to change this question by asking you how you think the people on Instagram voted the final five.
The general public?
The general Australian public. How do you think they voted the five and rank them in five? And then we can see if we agree with the list that they picked. So this is BBAU return. So it's BB fans, but Australians only.
So, and this took place this week, like after the episodes aired?
Yeah, this was after, I believe, Wednesday or Tuesday. Yeah.
Okay.
So it closed yesterday. So
my guess would be Sophie, Chad, Sarah. Maybe Sophie, Sarah, Chad.
Sophie, Sarah, Chad.
I don't know. Maybe. And then Dan and Matt would be the last two. I'm not sure about Sarah and Chad, the order.
So the order was actually in fifth place. So in reverse order, it's Dan, Matt, Chad, Sophie, Sarah. Sarah's actually number one. And the question from Iconic Nat is, do you agree with this order in terms of TV characters and then as like game players? I actually agree of Sarah being number one as both player and as TV character. I do think she's the best player. So.
TV character. I would say...
Oh, come on. There were so many Showman segments. That was a bit boring.
This might be controversial. I would say I think that Dan is actually a better character than he is a player. I think that, like, of all the players this season who have given Big Brother what it wants and like done their improv, I think he's the best at it. I think he has been the funniest making jokes. Even though I don't love his actions in the house. So like as a character, I think he would be up there, but he's also like very frustrating to watch even on the show at times, and so that drags him down again. I like Sarah as a person, but she hasn't been super entertaining on the show as a character. I think Sophie is probably my number one as a character, because she's like She has that sort of like Karen, I want to speak to your manager thing, which is like annoying, but it's not like you're a terrible person annoying. It's more just like this is annoying, which is kind of entertaining. And she has like a fire under her, and she's like she's a gymnast, but she's like super awkward and like not graceful. And I find that so amusing.
She's a bit clumsy.
Yeah. So like, I think as a character, she's probably my number one, followed by maybe Dan. And then Sarah, then Chad, then Matt, who is just dull as rocks.
Broken Hill. And then I'm guessing in terms of gameplay, you just agree with the list that they have, which is Sarah, Sophie, Chad, Matt, Dan, but you'd swap Sarah and Dan. Sophie and Dan. So.
Yeah. I'd put Dan a lot higher. I'd put Sarah, Dan,
Chad, Matt, Sophie.
No, I'd put Sophie above
Chad,
and not Matt though. I'd have to put Matt above Sophie given given what happened.
Well, that's all the questions, and we're at the end of the road now. We survived it. We did it. Everything's gonna be all white. Yes, I said that joke before, but I'm using it again. Recycling day. Happy recycling, everyone.
Oh boy. Well. Look, I don't want to, like, if there are people out there that are enjoying this show, I hope this is not like dragging you down. That is not the intent of this podcast. We are just, we are being genuine. Like this is our response. And hopefully if you're enjoying it, you're able to find like the humor in watching us suffer, trying to enjoy the thing that you are enjoying.
This is not apathy. We do care about it. And we will, I do want season two to be better. So Taryn, do you have anything to say to people who are listening, who are applying for season two, because auditions are open right now? What would you like to tell them? Be honest. Like, the people who are RHAP listeners and are applying for season two, in your honest opinion, is there anything you'd like to tell them before going in the house?
Well, like, in terms of what would I like them anything. To do, or what should they do?
Anything, like, what you would want to see from them. Not what they should, but what you want as a person.
Look, I think the number one thing is do not be self-righteous. Do not act like you have the moral high ground, the any high ground. You are a person in there just like anyone else. You're not entitled to loyalty. You're not entitled to success in the game. If you act like a baby, when things don't go right for you, like Matt and Dan did here, even though like it was justifiably they should be upset, if you are able to not act that way, then you will get points. Like when I think about like Hannah, who like went in there, bunch of things went wrong for her. She always kept a smile on her face. She always kept her head high. She never acted self-righteous. She never acted indignant. Like that's great stuff. No, she didn't have a big edit. No, she wasn't a big character, but I think that like somebody like her can really go out, with her head held high. That's like just base level. Like so many people went into that house and they acted in a way that was like they deserved success in the game, and that's just, you don't go in like that. And then for something like to do, go in with a fire under your belly, right? Like, that's what Hannah, I think, might have been missing. Like she didn't have as much fire, in her. Go in like Angela, go out swinging, be fun, play the game hard, but without, hard feelings, and have fun, enjoy yourself, and we will enjoy watching you. I think if you do those two things, it's going to be hard to go wrong, as long as like, look, I'm not going to advise you to not be racist, because that should be baseline.
Everything's going to be all white. That's time to chop.
Just do those two things, and I think you'll be good.
I'll just add on to everything that Taryn just said. I agree with, I endorse. I'll add on to that, play to win.
Yes.
I think some of the people in the, like, like Zoe, for example, she was playing for, I think, Dan to win more. The whole, oh, our alliance should spread out the votes evenly so everyone has a fair shot. Don't do that. Go in there for yourself, play hard, and play for your own self-interest. Play to win.
So can I ask, when is the public vote going to take place? Is there going to be an episode and then a break? Or by the time we record the next podcast, will it all be over?
I think by the time we record it, it'll be over. So next week is finale week. It's Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
We're getting three more?
Yes.
How do we have three more episodes? Are you serious?
Yeah, because one episode to get rid of final five, one for final four, and then I think the public's only voting for... We have three episodes left. So Monday, Tuesday, and then Wednesday is the grand finale, and the winner will be revealed on the 22nd of July. So by the time we record, it will all be over. So we should make a winner endorsement while we...
So the voting will take place...
Between Tuesday and Wednesday.
Between Tuesday and Wednesday.
Only 24 hours.
Oh, boy.
So it's that last... final four episode can really have an impact. And I think that in a way, Dan might, let's say that I think if the final four is the two pairs, whoever goes out in fourth place and who survives, whoever survives as the final pair might actually have a good chance of winning because they're going to be the underdog, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely. Because the other two might split the votes. It's definitely possible, especially like, and look, I've said they're doing the coronation for Sophie, but as we've seen in Big Brother Canada, that two episodes is plenty of time to change the narrative and in a 24-hour period vote, shift it onto somebody else. So it is technically still up in the air, although I don't see them doing that. I think it is possible that they could shift the focus elsewhere. But if I'm endorsing, my endorsement 100% is Sarah. I think Sarah would be my vote if she's there. If Sarah is not there, quite frankly, I'm not sure I care. If I had to choose...
Well, pick three people. That way, at least one of them will be in the final three, because it's five people.
Well, I'll have to do an order, a one, three. Two, three. Yeah, so Sarah would be number one. Honestly, like, here's the thing, too. The more the edit is telling me to go one way, the more just like deep down inside, I'm like, no. I'm not a sheep. I refuse to be told what to do by the edit. So my number two would be whoever I think the edit is telling me most to vote for I'm not going to vote for that person.
No wonder you like Big Brother 10 because you like going against the grain and you like being a renegade.
Yes. I just don't like, because look, I know my vote doesn't matter. That's why I feel like
it mattered during OTT. Remember that glorious season? Oh, remember that? It's like flashbacks to OTT again.
All right. So aside from that, Sarah number one. Look, fine, whatever. I'll do Sophie number two.
Number three.
You know what? Number three, I can't endorse Matt or Dan. I just can't do it. I'm sorry. I can't do it. I know they're probably better players, but this is a dumb game anyway. So I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to say Chad, whatever.
Okay. Well,
I said Chad. No, I'm not saying Chad. I'm only doing two.
Okay. So, just to recap, Taryn's official order is, Sarah, Sai, Sophie, I guess. And then, no, I refuse to put in Chad.
I'm taking out the eraser and I'm erasing Sophie. I'm only saying Sarah. That's it. No future endorsements. It's Sarah or bust. That's all.
Sarah or bust. Well, you know, the or bust thing, there's a few. That's not exactly the most amenable movement, but I will, for my own record, I say that I'm going to endorse Sarah one, Sophie two, and then Chad three, which is what Taryn kind of said. But I'm saying it with a little...
It's what I can't bring myself to say.
I'm a less busty person. Yeah, I'm a little less busty. And yes, the grand finale is it's coming. It's much like winter, the finale is coming, and it's Wednesday. So I think if we record on Thursday, it's all going to be over. So exciting.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. I'm sure we'll have plenty of things to say.
Well, the finale is going to be shot interestingly. Maybe we should talk about that for 2 minutes, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Because of COVID.
Right.
So we had
a Zoom call?
I think it might be a partial Zoom call because there's been a coronavirus outbreak in Melbourne. So a few people in Melbourne might not actually be able to fly out to Sydney. So
I mean,
might
it should be a Zoom call anyway. Like, you know, like it's not necessary for the show that they're all on the same stage or whatever.
Well, that's a crazy thing. Australia has mainly avoided harsh lockdowns, unlike some countries. So we've mainly been okay, but except for Melbourne. So I think everyone in the entire cast, minus I think Danny and Zoe, are going to be in Sydney. So. And it's just those two on Zoom, so it's going to be awkward.
That is
it's
weird.
It's not like they're important. So.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's what we have. And like I said, hopefully, look, I'm finding the show frustrating. I am apathy has been induced. But
which is crazy because they're winning in ratings. They're
right. Talking about the show. It makes it worth it. I'm having fun with that. I hope you guys listening at home are having fun with it as well. Even if you disagree with us, and hopefully if you do agree with us, it's a bit cathartic. And you know, I hope that I've been fair as well. Even though I'm having fun with the ranting and the raving, I hope that there's a base level of fairness in here as well. I am. In the serious moments, trying to make sure that's still there for the people that are enjoying it.
I mean, on a serious note, I want to thank you, Taryn, for inviting me onto this platform. I think you have been more than fair, actually. You've been quite generous. I think you've been a great ally. As someone who's both queer and Australian and a person of color, you've given me a platform to talk about the diversity issues, which I don't think a lot of other Big Brother Australia podcasts are talking about. And I do think that you've given a lot of leeway to Dan and Matt and to Chad and Sophie, Sarah. If anyone tries to come for you, they should come for me first. I'm like the outer walls of Boxing Day. I will be your outsider on, you know.
Well, thank you, Andrew, for doing this with me, because like your passion for the show and the level of detail that you were able to suffer through has really helped me get through it as well. And it's been a lot of fun talking through it with you.
If anyone has gotten to the end of this podcast, please tune in to the grand finale one. Please stay tuned.
All right, stay tuned. You can find me on Twitter at ArmstrongTaryn and on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. Andrew, where can people find you?
I'm at Andrew W. Shim. So that's W the letter and Shim, S-H-I-M. So Andrew W. Shim on Instagram and Twitter.
Yes, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time.